We're going to have a briefing by the Competition Commission on their report on the LPG market inquiry. Which the report was released, I think, end of March. So at the time of its release, we had intended to have this briefing, but we couldn't then. So we only have it now. So we will have that briefing, and immediately after that, we will give to the Department of Energy to respond to the report, in particular how they intend taking forward the recommendations coming out of the report. And then, as usual, we'll then have questions and discussions from members. I had asked that the Competition Commission present the report, and I must say that it was quite late when I asked them to, so we are grateful that they honored the invite, and just to say that next time we will not give them such a short notice. Thank you very much for honoring the invitation. So we will, without any waste of time, give Mr. Kotse to tell us about apologies. I see several members are not here. I'm not sure if their names are in the list of apologies before I comment about their absence. Go ahead, Mr. Kotse.
Thank you, Chair. So the following apologies: Mr. Mbuyani and Mr. Makai, who's both on sick leave, and then Mr. Bluhama, who has other prior commitments which he has to attend to, and then Mr. Esther Raisin is attending another portfolio committee meeting here in Parliament. And then we also received an apology from the Minister of Energy, who by invitation of the President is attending the BRICS meeting in China, Chair. Those are the apologies.
Comment. Do you want to change the agenda in the light of the apologies?
No, Chair, I don't want to change the agenda of the committee. I'm not quite sure, Chair, as to whether what is the law says about a member who absent himself from ever to attend the activities of the committee. I'm referring to Mr. Honorable Duma of Arang SA, because he's ever absent. I'm not sure as whether is there no way in which you can check with the Speaker of the National Assembly relating to members who absent themselves from the activities of the committee, because we are not here, Chair, to play to get salaries free of charge, and not honoring your responsibilities, even though he's a member of the committee. I'm speaking as a member of the committee to say, is there no way in which you can check with the Speaker as to whether what happened if a member continuously absent himself from the responsibilities given to him by this constitution of South Africa, because he's ever absent. Is it not going to encourage other members of the committee or other members of other political parties who have been given the responsibility to attend to, not to honor their responsibilities? I would like us maybe not to debate the chair, to give the honorable chair and the secretary of the committee to check with the speaker or the chair of chairs relating to people, honorable members, who absent themselves forever, because this is the second year Mr. the Honorable Kauma not honoring his responsibilities. I don't want us to debate the chair. Let's give you and the secretary of the committee the task to check with both honorable members, in particular the speaker of the National Assembly. Legally, so we'll get the report maybe in the next sitting of the committee, chair. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Matal. I see that the committee secretary has noted the point, so we will definitely come back with regards to that. So we can go straight to the next item, the briefing by the commission. So I suppose the commissioner is going to start. So I'm sure he will tell us how to going to approach the report. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Thembiko Sibonakele. I'm the commissioner of the Competition Commission. And I'm with Dr. Liberty Mnube, who is the chief economist of the Competition Commission and was responsible for the market inquiry into LPG. We are grateful that you have invited us, Chair. Even if it was a late notice, we understand. So we are, amongst other things, tasked to deal with monopolies. And we recognize that Parliament has monopoly over making laws. But unfortunately, it's not a monopoly we can control. So we just have to comply. But thanks very much for inviting us. We are delighted, actually, that you are having this hearing. We propose to both speak with Liberty, mainly focusing on the findings, and I will be addressing recommendations. To make it easier, we have looked at each aspect and then have recommendations as we go along, instead of putting all recommendations at the back, so that we can easily refer. But maybe let me just start with the legal framework for market inquiries. The Competition Act in 2013 was amended to confer broad powers on the Competition Commission to conduct market inquiries. And these entail an analysis of the state of competition in a particular market, rather than just focusing on the conduct of a particular firm. And obviously this has got a lot of advantages, because firms, once you start accusing them individually, you line them up as respondents, the dynamics change, your ability to get information and get cooperation becomes somewhat diminished. But when you are making an inquiry on the overall state of competition without accusing anyone, the process does tend to be much more open, which enable us to dig much deeper into the issues and make appropriate recommendations. So this kind of widens what we used to do, which was to investigate and prosecute identified firms. And this is one of the tools that we use in certain areas, particularly where we can't find an obvious transgression of the law, but the outcomes are telling us that there is a problem. For us to initiate an inquiry, we must have reasons to believe that a feature or a combination of features in the market results in prevention, restriction, or distortion of competition. That's really a jurisdictional foundation of a market inquiry. What happens when we are done with an inquiry? We may, if we find evidence of wrongdoing, refer firms, particular firms, for prosecution at the tribunal. We may further investigate the matter. We may make recommendations to government and policymakers, regulators, and even the firms themselves. We have an obligation to submit the report to the Minister of Economic Development with or without recommendations. And the Minister is required to place the report to the National Assembly within 10 business days of receiving the report. This brings us, I think, to where we are. We started this in August. On the 15th of August, we started a market inquiry into LPG, which we concluded, as you said, Chair, earlier in the year. We published the report in April, and we started the inquiry because we were concerned about, one, the structural features of the market, and you will see as we go along what we mean by this market structure that we think in and of itself is a concern. We also identify high switching costs. People don't switch, particularly industrial customers. There also seems to be regulatory issues that impact on competition. And fourthly, when we benchmark ourselves with different countries, there seems to be limited use of LPG in South Africa. And so all of these were the reasons why we started the inquiry. And the process of the inquiry itself used various methods to collect the information. We issued a call for submission to stakeholders. We had meetings with some of them, teleconferences. We did site visits, and we followed this up with various information focus information requests. And we had about 90 stakeholders or market participants contributing to those engagements. And we used a range of different methodologies to assess, which are the tools normally available to competition authorities, qualitative and quantitative tools. And we published various documents during the inquiry process for people to comment. It's been a very fair process. I think that is the only point I want to make. Before Liberty takes us through, let me just talk about the earlier point I made about the market structure. This is a very concentrated market structure by any measure. We have five refineries in South Africa producing LPG, Nitref, Sasol, Petro SA, NREF, and Chenref. They produce about 80% of what we use. And we also understand that they largely produce this as a byproduct of their fuel production. And this, we'll come back to it because it also talks to the incentives of what they, how they configure their refineries. The LPG that's produced by refineries is supplied to wholesalers, four major wholesalers, who account for more than 90% of the market. And this is achieved through long-term take-off agreements. I should also make the point that we did not focus in our inquiry on transformation issues. It was not one of the terms of reference we had put, although it became apparent that this was a very big issue. The wholesalers themselves, who control 90% of the market, all of them are foreign-owned, or at least have foreign origin. Three are French, and one is German. So Afrox, which is the biggest one, is German-owned. EasyGas is a French company. TotalGas is a French company. Oryx, although registered in a tax haven, we also understand that it is also French. Some of these have got some BEE, and some of them have acquired existing small black firms. So there's some BEE participation in some of them, although it's also fair to say that in all instances it is quite low. Chair, I think that it would be fair to criticize our report that it doesn't deal with this matter. It's a matter that is hanging and a matter that we think is probably best handled by the department. Because we had two options. Either we had to change the terms of reference and cover it more specifically, which would have prolonged the process, but we left it. But we flagged it. We flagged it as a very important aspect, particularly when you're dealing with a very sensitive issue of energy. Very sensitive issue of energy. We think that this structure is a huge problem. It's an anomaly in every country you go to in the world that you can have an energy source that's primarily controlled by foreign firms. It's a very anomaly. It's an anomaly. We have brought findings which we will talk about. But just in brief, it's very clear that there is limited local refining capacity. And it's also very clear that there are regulatory gaps. And lastly, there are huge infrastructure problems. So broadly, those are the themes that we would be talking about. And also just very broadly, in terms of the usage of LPG, just to situate its context, we understand that about 15% is used in households, domestic use, and the rest, about 85% is bulk users, so industrial customers use it. And as I said earlier, one of our concerns is the uptake, has been the uptake of households, especially for this important and convenient energy source. So if Liberty can take us through the first finding.
Chair, I will focus on the features that distort competition and our findings in that regard. So the Commission has outlined already the structure of this market. Upstream, you have regulation. Downstream, you have regulation. The upstream regulation in terms of pricing relates to what is called the maximum refinery gate price. And downstream, you have what is called the retail, the maximum retail price. So you have these two levels of regulation that are already in place. Our findings related to this is that when it comes to the maximum, the upstream regulated price, the MRGP, it does not incentivize refineries to prioritize the production of LPG. And this, because LPG is a byproduct, the refineries then choose to produce all the other products ahead of LPG. This is largely because of the framework itself. For instance, you can find scenarios where the MRGP is lower than the landed import price. So when they're thinking about what they will get out of when they sell the gas, they realize that the price that they will realize is going to be lower than what others would get, and that's because of the regulation. So this, we think, has a negative impact on the security of supply of LPG. Moreover, the MRGP, the upstream regulated price, and the downstream, the MRP, the downstream regulated price, that has not been reviewed by the department since 2012. So there is a need to constantly review such a pricing regulation so that the incentives are always aligned. We also, when it relates to monitoring, the department does not monitor the MRGP, and there's also limited capacity to monitor the MRP, so the downstream price. The department has about 9 inspectors who have to cover about 5,000 service stations. This means that they are not able to be able to monitor all the service stations and also to monitor the regulation itself. We also find instances where market participants abuse the pricing regulation. So they do some, it's meant to be a ceiling. They do sometimes go above the ceiling. The other limitation that we have found is that there are no sanctions to protect against overpricing. So the department does not have prosecutorial powers. You have a regulation, you cannot sanction it. You have limited capacity in terms of monitoring adherence. And we think that is a limitation when it comes to the pricing regulations.
From this one, I think the recommendations flow naturally from the findings. We suggest that NEPSA should undertake pricing and monitoring of regulations, both upstream and downstream. And obviously that would include some capacitation of NEPSA, but I think we think that there's a best chance that it may receive focused attention there. we think that this is also within its mandate, the context of its mandate to attract investment, stimulate production, and ensure regulatory certainty. Our view, though, is that in the long term, you want to aim for the deregulation of the price. But this can only be done, and again, this is why you need to closely monitor, because you don't want to deregulate and then you have prices increasing or shortages of supply. So it needs to be done very carefully by a regulator who's going to monitor it very closely. Because we think that this can only be done once the supply constraints have been resolved. In other words, where you have enough incentives for refineries to produce and you have addressed bottlenecks for imports. And we will talk about those just now. Because right now you can't do that, because if you were to deregulate and you have a structure like this in a market, you will have a lot of abuse. So you want to deal with all of, because the reason why wholesalers currently would be able to abuse the structure is that they cannot be disciplined by imports, because you have infrastructure problems with imports. So they sort of have a captured market that cannot have any alternatives. So deregulation is not an option in the short term. But actually, in the long run, it is better, we think, to deregulate once you have fixed all of these problems. And we think that the department should undertake a study on how price regulation can be achieved.
The other feature of this market in which regulation leads to sub-optimal market outcomes relates to the non-price regulation that is in place. So LPG, the LPG sector itself has many regulations and licensing requirements at various levels of the value chain. This causes overlaps and misalignment, which then leads to the sub-optimal policy outcomes. I will illustrate a few just to give a sense to you, Chair, about what we have found. So if you take, for instance, the overlapping jurisdiction, this has led to the stalling of many projects because of the overlaps and the misalignment. It can take up to 3 years for a regulatory clearance for a refinery, up to 4 years. And it can also take up to 3 years for wholesalers to get the clearance to set up storage facilities. This is because if you take, for instance, infrastructure licensing, you have the department in terms of getting your wholesale license. You have TNPA if you want to build infrastructure. You have the Department of Environmental Affairs to get the environmental authorization. You also have NERSA to get tariff approvals. And then there's also local government. For an investor, that can cause problems if the processes are not aligned. The concrete example of this is where, for instance, the construction of import and storage facilities at ports. This is necessary because you want to unlock supply by bringing imports in if you have limited domestic production. Now, the TNPA is responsible for granting concessions to infrastructure developers within port boundaries. And then you have NERSA in terms of the Petroleum Pipelines Act, which then sets tariffs on the pipelines and approves the tariffs to be charged for storage. This can lead to, and it can and has led to, an overlap in jurisdiction as well as inconsistent policy outcomes. Take, for instance, when the issue of the duration of the licenses. There is a mismatch here as well. The TNPA may grant concessions valid for about 20 years, while NERSA can issue a license which, or licenses which may be valid up to 25 years. This misalignment in policy means that for an investor, the decision to invest becomes compromised.
On recommendations, this is exactly why we are recommending that NERSA be responsible for wholesale licensing activities, including their monitoring. I should be upfront, Chair, that we are advocating for centralization. We think that there are too many regulators and there is a coordination problem. To limit that coordination problem, we think that there should be some consolidation, and of course that would need legislation to achieve. We also recognize that NERSA and TNPA, because I mean the port authority is always going to have some authority over the port, but how that authority is exercised should be regulated strictly through an instrument. We are suggesting here should be an MOU that should set out the decision-making process, including joint decision-making processes with respect to applications that would bind both NERSA and TNPA. And of course, they would apply their own laws and regulations as they look at this.
We've already stated that we have the production of LPG in South Africa that is limited, and imports are one way to unlock the gaps in domestic supply. And this has it comes from the misalignment in regulation that we've identified, that the current infrastructure is inadequate and has stifled the infrastructure to import is inadequate and has stifled the uptake of LPG. We know that a number of licenses have been granted, and we think that these facilities, once constructed, will be key to unlocking the supply, the supply constraints that we see.
Again, here, Chair, I think it's just a matter of emphasis that we think that there should be a review of the regulatory frameworks applicable to the construction of the LPG important storage facilities, as outlined in various pieces of legislation, the National Ports Act, Petroleum Pipelines Act. I think it's also important that we make it very clear in this industry who's the ultimate authority, because there is a lot of confusion. Take for an example something like a license to construct a facility. There is a question about whether you can impose conditions on these important. One of the conditions that we would be interested in is if you are importing and you are supplying the market, that you do so in non-discriminatory terms. So in other words, you can't perpetuate what's already been happening, where you have long-term supply agreements to particular wholesalers and keeping everybody else out. Who must impose that condition? Currently, nobody knows. Because TNPA will say it's not my responsibility, I only have to provide facilities at the port. So there is a regulatory gap, which I think leads to all sorts of abuses.
I will just follow up on the other feature, which causes distortions in this market and the conditions to this, which is the long-term supply agreement. This market is full of long-term supply agreements. LPG is allocated on these contractual agreements, and sometimes also allocated on spot basis. Producers prefer the long-term agreement, obviously because it means there is some reliability in terms of upliftment. And it also means that your credit lines and your payment your payment history, and there is also available supply. So it secures to them a credit flow, and that's why they prefer the long-term supply agreements. The major refineries allocate LPG mostly for internal consumption, but that they cannot use, they then sell to the wholesalers on these supply agreements, which are long-term. The challenge here is that these long-term supply agreements are a barrier to entry for small entrants who seek, or outsiders who seek to come into this market. The wholesaler competitiveness, to be a competitive wholesaler, you need to have the sufficient and consistent supply of LPG. If you are an outsider seeking to enter this market, without that security or consistent supply, you will not be able to enter and effectively compete. Here the issue relates to historic relationships, between producers and the wholesalers. We understand that some of these wholesalers were once part of the refineries. So you have a network of relationships which then cements the long-term supply agreement, keeping outsiders out and incumbents secure in their positions.
Again to illustrate the impact of the long-term supply agreement. We've seen agreements that are as long as 25 years with unlimited renewal clauses. And obviously these entrench the incumbent. And we've also seen some discrimination in terms of discounting, where some of the wholesalers are able to get as much as 10% discount from the regulated price. Upstream price, and these tend to favor the larger wholesalers and with limited discounting, if at all, for smaller wholesalers. So this obviously does give them a huge competitive advantage. This, I think, has been the most contentious issue between the Commission and the industry participants, refineries and wholesalers. We are recommending that the agreements be kept at most at 10 years, the take-off agreements. And there should be obviously a sufficient opportunity for wholesalers to recoup their investments and for refineries to be able to predict that somebody will be able to take the LPG as they produce it. We recognize that. But we still think that you can achieve that without evergreen agreements, because there should always be a period where you can consider new players. We think also there should be a removal of automatic renewal clauses so that there could be some process, preferably a competitive process, to contract with new with wholesalers after the agreements have lapsed. We also have understood that the refineries currently allocate about 2% to small wholesalers, where, as I we've suggested, over 90% is to larger wholesalers. This number we think should be increased. We have suggested now that we should, at a minimum, have it increased fivefold, which would still be a very low percentage. It will take you to about 10%. This number, of course, also needs to be reviewed because it's still not where it should be. But at least we think we should start from there. And you may ask, why are we not being ambitious and going further than that? Well, we could. The only issue is you need to ramp up the capacity of smaller players as well to be able to absorb that capacity. So right now, as things currently stand, they are absorbing about 2%. And for them to jump to 10% is going to need significant ramp up of their capacity. But of course, if that were to be done, ideally that number should increase. And we think that also you need to give them some security of supply, that you need agreements that would give them that security for at least 2 years. At a minimum, because also to make investments on infrastructure, you need a little bit of certainty on the supply side. Obviously, if this allocation is not taken up, which we hope won't be the case, the remaining LPG can then be sold on the spot market.
I will now take you through our findings in relation to the cylinder exchange, the cylinder deposit fee, and the cross-filling of cylinders. Here, again, we found distortions in the marketplace. Take, for instance, the cylinder exchange. This is a practice where wholesalers and distributors exchange cylinders, empty cylinders, amongst each other, and they return it. So once the cylinder is used, it's returned to the owner. Here, the distortion in terms of the exchange practice relates to the practice itself of cylinder exchange being governed by bilateral agreements which keep new entrants out of such agreements. The potential barrier here, this is a big potential barrier to one who wants to enter the cylinder market. If you do not have your cylinders being returned to you and you are a new entrant, you will not be able to profitably grow. So we found it as a distortion in the marketplace. The other distortion that we found relates to the cylinder deposit fee. If you want to have LPG and you don't have a cylinder, you pay a deposit fee and you're given a cylinder full of LPG. So the issue here relates to that the department has set up a limit on this deposit fee, which is meant to be the maximum of 45% of the landed price. The challenge with this deposit fee is that the department has not reviewed this deposit fee since 2010. And because of that, it has been replaced as a regulator. So we found that the participants, the wholesalers, have come together in a cartel to change the deposit fee by themselves. So what you have now is private regulation. We have initiated a case. The information came through while the commission was doing its inquiry. The cartels division of the commission is currently looking at this cartel, which arises because the market participants have found it they've decided on themselves to privately regulate the deposit fee. The other issue that comes across is that you also have a uniform deposit fee, no matter the size of your cylinder. So a person, for many households that use the smaller cylinders, they pay the same amount as the big restaurant that uses a bigger deposit fee. And you have an issue of cross-subsidization in that scenario. The last issue that in terms of cylinders is the cross-filling of cylinders. This is where industry players refill cylinders that don't belong to them. The implication of this cross-filling is the owners of the cylinders don't return to the owners of the cylinder. There are safety concerns, and safety is a big issue in this market. Everyone is concerned about safety, and I think safety must be a concern. These practices are also unlawful, so cross-filling is unlawful. Unless you can get consent. So our finding here relates to that, to a realization that cross-filling is a prevailing practice, either legal or illegal in this sector. And that one needs to balance the issues of safety and competition in order to make sure that they're sustainable, there's a sustainability of the industry, and there is investment into LPG. So here, our findings relate to encouraging wholesalers and customers to stay away from the cross-filling of cylinders.
Chair, this is probably one of the most complex areas of this industry, because you supply, your logistics are through these cylinders. And again, South Africa is has seemingly not made a clear decision about these issues, whether we allow cross-filling or we don't. And sort of things have evolved into a situation where we have a hybrid model. We have not resolved this issue because it's been quite complex. We have looked at different countries. There are many safety concerns around cross-filling. There are countries that have allowed it, and the markets are indeed thriving in those countries. But there are still safety issues that are being reported. So you largely find it in developing countries. Nigeria, I think, is a very good example of this very thriving LPG market, but very high levels of accidents and things like that. And then on the other end, you have largely developed countries that do not allow cross-filling. You find these countries like Canada, very, very good safety record. And so this is a policy matter we have not resolved, and we have said that the current hybrid model still works, where the 9 kg cylinders and below, customers can either lease or purchase cylinders from a wholesaler or retailer. And customer may only refill cylinder at the respective wholesaler or designated distributor, or may exchange the cylinder at an accredited exchange site for all the leased cylinders. And the customer may also have the option of purchasing the cylinder and may refill the cylinder at any accredited site. The issue where I think we came strong on was that any licensed wholesaler should not be refused participation in the cylinder exchange program. So the bilateral agreements need to be opened up. The issue of the deposit fee, I think, is a very obvious gap as well. We think that this should be linked to the landed cost of importing cylinders. And again, we go back to this issue of a regulator, because you've got to keep monitoring. You've got to keep monitoring that the price of that cylinder still makes sense commercially. And we think that NERSA should do that. Obviously, we will continue, the Commission will continue with this ongoing investigations of the industry deciding to fix that that deposit fee by themselves, because that was not their role, that was the role of the regulator. And even the failure of the regulator still doesn't justify the industry taking over the fixing of that price. Obviously, the cross-filling, as we said, is somewhat of a controversial issue, but if you take it away, you are closing the market as well. We think that it should be done within the confines of the law.
The last feature of this market that we are going to talk to relates to the high cost of switching. This feature also causes distortions in this market. So, in general, the ease of switching depends on the cost that one incurs to switch. Here, you've got an issue with the protracted nature of negotiations between an incumbent supplier whose term has come to an end and an entrant who needs to come in. These delays may mean delays in transferring the equipment between the incumbent and the outsider who wants to come into the market, or the new entrant. The reasons for not switching that the cost to switch to the supplier is greater at times than the potential savings derived from switching. But we have found instances of switching, so it does take place, but it is not seamless. The problems relate to, first, you need to have the capital investment to set up the infrastructure. The ownership sometimes resides with the LPG supplier. So think of a reticulation system, and you want to come into a mall where there's already a reticulation system. Sometimes the LPG supplier owns the infrastructure. There are also safety considerations that need to be taken account of. And then you also have these restrictive supply contracts between the wholesaler and the end user. Just maybe to zoom in on these supply agreements, which are of a concern. They are sometimes very vague in terms of the ownership of the equipment during as well as after the supply agreement has come to an end. There is limited disclosure on the costs of the installed LPG equipment when these costs have been fully amortized whether the end users own them or whether they still remain the property of the LPG supplier. Typically, the ownership retains to the LPG supplier even after the costs have been fully amortized.
A recommendation, we think that there should be a separation of agreements. So separate LPG supply agreement from LPG equipment. In other words, the infrastructure agreement. So if I sell you LPG, there must be a contract for selling LPG and there must be a contract for infrastructure. Because ultimately the infrastructure should belong to the customer. So if I'm paying for it as a supplier now, once it's fully amortized, it must then revert back to the customer. Because then that will enable the customer to be free to choose a supplier that they want in the future. Because the current arrangement, as we have explained, locks our customers into particular supply arrangements. Again, we go back to NERSA. We think that it should develop and publish guidelines on the appropriate methodology for valuation of LPG equipment so that this is not seen as a stumbling block. We think that it should also be mandated to expand to include the resolution of disputes relating to the valuation of equipment, because we anticipate that on something like this you are going to have a lot of disputes and contractual issues between the parties, and you would need these mediated and resolved. Let me just indicate, Chair, that we, following this, we have had this submitted to Parliament. We have included in our recommendations timelines and responsibilities on what needs to be done, by whom and when. And all of this has been submitted to both Economic Development as well as Department of Energy, and if members would be interested, we would also make this available. But it's really just a tracking and monitoring tool that we have. One of the things that has happened, even with these recommendations already, is this issue where we call this namnawe, I don't know it in English, where it's not clear who is responsible. So we have recommendations here, and we have put a name of a responsible party, but in reality there is no legal framework that holds anybody responsible and therefore accountable for what needs to be done. So we think that you should, as Parliament, use your monopoly to make laws to clarify this issue and close these gaps. And you will see, as I conclude, that a lot of what we are suggesting, there's a lot of abuse by market players. We have some regulations, but in all fairness, I think that it seems that the department is overwhelmed by all of this. There is an issue of capacity. Even if you give this to NERSA, you will still need to address the issues of capacity. And really the department, we have interacted with them throughout the process. We like them. They are like a father. They are like a father in this household. But we're saying that the father must also delegate to other members of the household, because if he wants to do everything, he's going to break. He's not going to be able to do all of this. So there needs to be some division of labor, with, of course, the department leading the charge but it must appropriately delegate to those who are most likely to be able to ramp up capacity to do all of this work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we're very efficient in terms of time. We started 10 minutes late and we are on course. We just 10 minutes over the allocated time for the presentation. So that was very efficient. I wish the market was as efficient as that. The National Energy Regulator, welcome. I didn't see you. So you do have those time the booklet, ne? You have copies of that.
We have a few, but we can also make them.
Mr. Korte says he doesn't have copies, so if we can just make them available. We will now, honourable members, move to get the presentation from the Department of Energy. Are you ready? So, what do you call this, Minanawa?
Nam Nawe.
But it's, you call it what? Nam Nawe. Nam Nawe. Nam Nawe. So what's the difference between Nam Nawe and Nam Nawe? Nam Nawe. No, I understand. It's the thing about the scent. Yeah, I understand. The father is going to present now. Okay, Deputy Minister, will you please start?
Good morning, Chair.
I think we should leave it with the father. The mother would have been more efficient, so let's just leave it with the father.
I'm glad you understand the Chair.
I do. Thanks. Go ahead, Deputy Minister.
Good morning, honourable members, and special good morning to the Commission, and of course the public at large, and to the officials here. Chairperson, I'm really grateful that we're able to have this presentation in this format, because I think it would have been left a little bit of uncertainty if we had been responding to a report without the Commission having an opportunity to actually present it to the public. So I think this format actually works best, and I'm very happy that the Commission was able to accept the invitation, even though it was at a last minute. But I think it's in all our interest, and particularly in the interest of the public. Chairperson, we will also not get into a lot of detail, but try and respond to the issues that the Commission has raised, and try and also maybe in that process deal with some of the Namnawe issues, because it's always a fine balancing act. When you regulate everything, then you become a monopoly. When you distribute it, you can become fragmented. So those are some of the choices that we have to make and we have to live with. But what is important is the issues that they have raised about clarity around who does what. And I think those are that's what the commission is basically raising. The second aspect, of course, is the responsibility that we all have to make sure that we encourage properly regulated and encourage growth within the sector. And that sector must be, in that growth, must be able to benefit more than just the usual people who have benefited right through. So I will not get into any of the details. We will do the presentation, and after that, I think it would then be an opportunity for us to actually chat the way forward together. With your permission, Chairperson, I will ask that the acting DG may do the presentation as in response to the report by the Competition Commission and the LPG. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Go ahead, acting DG.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, colleagues, the Commissioner, and colleagues from the Competition Commission. Good morning. We had prepared, Chair, a presentation which we wanted to own, presenting what the Commission's report contained. And we're a bit nervous, Chair, until the Portfolio Committee decided to invite the Competition Commission. So effectively, our report is submitted changes, Chair. It then starts perhaps much later. We have the introduction, but then we move straight to page 18. That's where our response starts. But Chair, just to say that as a department, we were quite excited when this market inquiry was undertaken. We were aware that there were issues that needed to be attended to. And I think the commission was a better place to deal with those issues, particularly around anti-competitive behavior. But Chair, if I move straight, and I'll be assisted by Mr. Ndlovu, who is the father in this LPG sector. If I move straight to slide number 18, I just want to start by saying, Chair, our own assessment of what is happening in the sector, much as we agree with the bulk of what the Competition Commission has found, we think that the root cause of where we are today in the LPG sector is infrastructure, and is the inadequate infrastructure to produce LPG or to import LPG. So that's where we think the root cause is. Of course, we also agree that there is coordination that needs to be tightened.
And on coordination, Chair, I just want to indicate that one example is around the issue of safety. There needs to be coordination between the Department of Energy as well as the Department of Labor. Because, for example, issues such as cylinders, they are regulated as pressure vessels in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act, which falls under the Department of Labor. The Department of Energy has no authority to monitor the filling practices of a pressure vessel. We don't have that mandate in law, nor do we have the competence to do that. So effectively, what would need to be what is required there is coordination between the Department of Labor and the Department of Energy, as much as there needs to be coordination between NERSA and the TNPA. The other issue I want to raise, Chair, is that we are concerned about the cost to the consumer. And the cost to the consumer drives what we do. South African retail price of LPG is amongst the highest. And that is of concern to us. And it is like that because there is inadequate infrastructure for producing as well as importing it. But Chair, on the issue of the refineries and incentives and so on, there is also a technical limitation in the sense that for every barrel of oil that you refine, you can only produce 3% of 3% LPG out of a barrel. That's a technical limitation. So you can incentivize and do all manner of things. But technically, unless you change the configuration of a refinery, you are not going to be able to up the percentage of LPG that you can get out of a barrel of crude oil. That is the reality. So if you refine 159 liters, which is a barrel, you will get about 5 liters of LPG. And that's a technical limitation, but you can't do anything about that. So, Chair, I think I felt I needed to say these before we get into the detail. And also to say that this is a dynamic industry. What we have seen is that the sector has attracted investors. As much as there were delays in, you know, and those delays in approvals were not caused by the regulators themselves. Sometimes it was the market players that were competing for space in the sector, which took each other to court and so on. And that led to delays in finalizing some of the infrastructure investment. I will also say that we are seeing a change in the dynamics in the sector, Chair, in the sense that there is importation of LPG now that's coming out of Mozambique, because Mozambique has built infrastructure to import LPG. They started their infrastructure investment perhaps after we had started ours, they finished earlier. So you are seeing effectively competition that is coming in with the Saldanha infrastructure being completed. There is gas coming into Saldanha. The Kuga facility being licensed by NERSA. Then there is a Richards Bay facility licensed by NERSA. So it covers effectively most of the coast. There is an existing one in Port Elizabeth, and then there is a small one in East London, which there is a, you know, a plan around that one. So, Chair, I think in a nutshell, that is what you find in this sector, that there are changes, and of course, regulation has got to keep up. But I think as we think about what we do going forward, we have to think about whether, if we are going to deregulate, do we really need to change all these laws to regulate for 1 year and then after that deregulate? So in thinking about how we go forward, we'll have to think about, you know, what is the best option of managing a changing environment to suit and to come up with a framework that will suit that a changing environment. Chair, I'm going to request that Mr. Ndlovu goes very quickly and perhaps over some of the responses that we have, with your permission, of course, Chair. And, you know, we can then get into the discussion. But largely, Chair, we welcome the report, and we believe that it helps to for all of us to engage, and it will bring all those who perhaps have been sitting on the sidelines, they'll be forced now to come to the party as well. Thank you, Chair. With your permission, Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, DM, and DG, with all protocol observed. I think perhaps I need first to emphasize what the DG has actually mentioned in response to the recommendations of the Commission, particularly starting with the issue of concentration and ownership. The Commission made a very interesting recommendation, which in fact could be implemented in the long term, that of deregulation, because that can only happen when we've got adequate supplies of LPG. And the DG in his presentation has mentioned that the main issue here is about infrastructure. If we get the infrastructure right, then we will be able to have abundant supplies of LPG. Then we can move to the next step of deregulation. But one important point to make regarding the concentration and ownership of the refineries, I must point out that even if we incentivize, as the DG has suggested, we incentivize the refineries, but there is a limitation to their production. Most important of all is that LPG is not their core product. They've got more other important products than LPG. In fact, we had a discussion in the past, way before the Commission started making an inquiry about the incentive to refineries. When we ask those questions in terms of what would be the basis, well, they couldn't come out clearly, but it is very clear that they cannot produce more than they cannot produce what the market wants, because it's not their core product. They are more interested in the production of other important products like petrols and the jet fuels. So that's one other point, that it's not their core product, and there are limitations to the production because of the configuration of refineries. Nevertheless, we support this recommendation by the commission that we need to monitor the structure, but the most important way of dealing with all the ills that are in the LPG market, number one, it's mainly the supply of LPG, adequate supply of LPG, and that is going to happen when we've got adequate infrastructure. Moving to the regulatory environment of non-pricing, the views of the DOE and NERSA being the regulator for issuing wholesale licensing and monitoring thereof, we wish to point out that at this stage, in terms of the current legislation, NERSA is an economic regulator, has got a mandate of issuing licensing for the construction of and the operation of petroleum infrastructure. So that is the current situation at the moment. So the department, meaning the Minister of Energy, then is responsible for regulating the issue of wholesale licenses in terms of the current legislation, the Petroleum Products Act. The issue of overlapping jurisdiction, we do acknowledge that there are such instances where the port authority, who are responsible for the infrastructure within the ports, and of course NERSA, our regulator, who is responsible for setting tariffs for such infrastructure, do sometimes overlap. The commissioner has mentioned that the concessions given by the post regulator may be shorter than the consideration that is given by our regulator. For instance, a lifetime of a regulatory asset of 25 years, whereas the concession could be 20 years. We are aware of such misalignment, but as the DG has actually indicated that the department has done something. In fact, we have amended our regulations regarding the petroleum infrastructure to align those issues and also to improve the evaluation of regulatory assets. And in fact, now we can see the developments that are happening now. Some investors have actually then started putting investments, and you have heard from the DG that there are some other potential infrastructure for which licenses have been issued in Richards Bay, in Kuha, and so forth. Those are because of what the department has done in order to deal with the short to medium term issues. And the other important issue on the alignment between the various regulators, particularly the ports regulator and NERSA, there is an existing MOU now. Which needs to be further explored in terms of other issues like unearthing other challenges that might hinder the development of infrastructure. But there is something that is happening on that aspect. The views on the department on NERSA having to undertake the pricing and monitoring of MRGP, I think that issue has been raised in terms of capacity, but first thing is the current legislation that we are having, because the pricing of LPG at the moment is under the jurisdiction of the department under the Petroleum Products Act. And by virtue of that legislation, NERSA, as an economic regulator, would not be able to enforce such issues under its current legislation, which is the Petroleum Pipelines Act. That would need sort of a major overhaul of the legislation. But of course, the DG has mentioned that if we consider the developments that are happening now in terms of infrastructure, which actually might lead to early deregulation, would it be an appropriate thing now to start such a major process of regulatory overhaul? But we do accept, you know, that we need to beef up particularly the punitive measures if in fact someone has been found to have transgressed the regulatory requirements. When it comes to the short to medium term issues on the pricing of LPG, the DOE has already undertaken an exercise of reviewing all the regulatory matters, starting from the maximum refinery gate price, which is at the top, and until at the maximum retail price. I think one anomaly that we have actually identified in that process is that we have left one component in the regulatory in the supply chain that is not attended to, and of course that is what is actually causing a lot of complaints, even from some of the retailers who say that they are being squeezed by wholesalers. So we are looking at that, and we hope that by the end of this financial year we'll have a new regulatory framework. Okay. The issue, I think, as a summary, is that, of course, what is the ultimate goal of the department? Is what has been already recommended in the Energy White Paper, that we should move towards deregulation. I think the Competition Commission has pronounced clearly on that, and we as a department accept that. And we believe that once we have adequate supply of LPG, then we'll be able, and also having the appropriate infrastructure, will have abundant supplies of LPG. Those will deal with even with this kind of structure, the structural issues of the market, because we will have a number of players coming into the market, will not be depending only these four or five refiners. And of course, the supply of LPG, the abundant supply of LPG, will also deal with the issue of prices, because it will be the market that will be setting the prices. So we hope that now our focus on the infrastructure, if we can remove these current hindrances on the provision of petroleum infrastructure, we will deal with a number of these ills.
Chair, as we'll do, like the Commission, with your permission, as the Commission had done,
we are sharing the present. I'll take it from here, Chair, with your permission. Chair, the issue of the limited domestic supply, we did allude to earlier that there is a technical limitation, and the only option left, there are two options effectively left to us currently. The first option is that we need to invest in infrastructure for import. That's the one. But the secondly is the one that was alluded to by the minister in the budget vote speech, where the minister indicated that there is a need to consider new refining capacity. Because once you have new refining capacity, then you begin to enhance the country's capacity to produce LPG. So those options are options on the table. The one of infrastructure, import infrastructure investment is unfolding as we speak, and then a decision on additional refining capacity is then the one that will be taken before the end of the year, as was indicated by the minister. Now, I think the issue of construction, I think we've dealt with that. On the MOU between NERSA and NPA, Mr. Ndlovu has alluded to that, so I won't spend a lot of time on that one. The price deregulation is a long-term objective, we agree with that, but it must be linked to infrastructure, not only import infrastructure, Chair and members, but also distribution infrastructure. So what we would need here is, once this import infrastructure is constructed, we then need to invest in distribution and in a manner that lowers the cost to the consumer. Because currently, with all that is happening, the consumer is still not enjoying the benefits, and that is the one that we are there to protect effectively. The long-term supply agreements, I think the Competition Commission, we support the Commission's findings and recommendations. We think that they are best placed to deal with the issue of uncompetitive behavior. And then what has been recommended by the Commission for set-asides or preferential access of 10% for smaller wholesalers, We think that it is feasible, and we are in full agreement with this recommendation. The issue of delinking infrastructure from contractual agreements, we think that also is an important finding, and we agree with the remedy that has been proposed by the Commission in as far as that is concerned, because the fact that you invested in infrastructure in a mall should not guarantee you supply in perpetuity. At some point, someone else needs to be able to compete to supply that business with LPG on an equal footing. On the issue of cylinders, as I mentioned, there are other players that within government that we need to bring on board. Chair, I want to just place the fact that in as far as cylinders are concerned, there's a safety consideration. The issue of cylinder deposits, which you may not find in other countries, is because you need to find a way of bringing back the cylinders to the original owner for the safety checks. The reason that you have in countries like where you have cylinder exchange, the reason you have all these accidents, it's because no one can be held accountable. You can fill someone else's cylinder, overfill it, it leads to an accident, you can disown it. and say, I did not, you know, fill that cylinder. Whereas if you prohibit cylinder filling, you know, filling other people's cylinders, then you know if there's an accident, there's only one supplier that must answer as to what could have happened. Was it overfilling or, you know, any other defective, you know, cylinder itself? So I think that that is what drives us to think that we need to maintain the issue of these cylinder deposits, but also then prohibit the cross-filling. So again, Chair, as I indicated, we will need, in as far as enforcement, to bring the Department of Labor's, you know, pressure vessel unit into this LPG sector as a priority sector going forward. So we will then look at the issue of the deposit fees, as was raised by the Competition Commission. There was a view that we did not amend the cylinder deposit fees, but also we did not amend the MRP. I just need to indicate that the maximum retail price, the MRP, has been adjusted twice now, 2015 December, as well as 2016 December. Now, again, adjusting it only means we adjust it upwards. And the only person who loses out in this whole adjustment is the consumer. Because at the end of the day, we just pass that through, and there's no benefit. So every year, if we had adjusted the LPG MRP every year since 2010, South Africa's LPG would be highly expensive. As it is now, we pay twice what India pays per kilogram of LPG. In fact, more than twice. It's higher than even Switzerland. So it is something that we need to confront, not necessarily to always incentivize other people to produce, but also to look at, you know, the benefit to the consumer and user. I think, as indicated, then the Department of Labor, we need to work together with them on the issue of the cylinder exchange. The high cost of switching, we support the competition's recommendation in this regard, and we believe that you know, we are fully aligned with them on that, and also the dispute resolution that has been proposed by the Commission is also acceptable to us. Then the agreements, I think I've spoken to that we fully agree with the delinking of the agreements, as well as the infrastructure. And this is, by the way, is something that the Competition Commission in the UK also was seized with, and they proposed certain remedies which are not dissimilar to what the Competition Commission in South Africa has proposed. So, Chair, in conclusion, we believe that you know, the regulated price is effective if the wholesale value chain is also regulated. We are in the process of revising the pricing mechanism. I think we, as I had indicated, our focus is really the end user, the end consumer. It can't be that we, in this day and age, we're still paying 20 rands per kilogram for LPG. We believe that the prices have an opportunity to actually go lower than that, given the what has happened with abundance of gas in the U.S., abundance of gas in other countries, which we can then bring into our country at lower prices. So there must be a benefit to the consumer as a result of what has happened in the gas market. So our focus, Chair, is to work with NERSA to ensure that the infrastructure that they have licensed, the construction is done as speedily as possible so that there can be benefit in as far as the end consumer is concerned. We will, though, Chair, look at, you know, some kind of overall plan, which then brings all the parties on board, and we could also use guidance from the committee in that regard. We did indicate that there are two facilities that have been recently commissioned in Saldanha. These facilities have doubled the import capacity of the country and, in fact, are opening up the LPG market. Just by way of information, Chair, the one facility was opened by both the Minister of Economic Development and the Minister of Energy in July, and Minister also visited the Avedia facility in July as well. As I indicated, there are other facilities that are currently have been licensed are in different stages of investment decision, Chair. Thank you.
Deputy Minister, do you have anything to say before we open for questions?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think we are ready now.
Thank you. Honourable members, it's time for questions. Let me start with my question about the status of the recommendations. So, okay, put it this way. So, as the status of these recommendations, and perhaps you could deal with that at the end, because what I would be interested in is, having seen the recommendations, what's going to happen to them, including where there may be different views of the department with regard to what has got to be done with the recommendations. So we need some sense of what's going to be the way forward with regard to the implementation of the recommendations and how do we fix the areas of disagreement with regard to those recommendations, so that we know that at some point in future we can call somebody back here to understand what has happened with regard to the implementation of the recommendations. So that's my main question with regard to the way forward. I don't know what is the status of the recommendations or remedial actions of the public protector. But I don't know what is the status of these recommendations, including what the things you call NAM now in this. Because these exercises are important, They are not academic exercises. We're making recommendations because we have an intention to implement them. So I just want to get a sense, including your booklet. So I can take your booklet, that small booklet with recommendations, the allocation of responsibilities, timelines. So we can have that. I read it. But the people cited there think they look at it, they laugh. So nothing happens. So I need to be clear. What does this mean when I read this booklet? Am I sure that the people who are allocated responsibilities are going to act on these things or what? Okay. We can deal with that at the end if we like, so that we clear about the way forward. Honourable members, that's Honourable Faku. Dari Matala, why do you raise your hand and then I put it down? Honourable Matala, Honourable Mabunda. What happened to Honourable Tata? Yeah, okay. You can raise a hand on her behalf. Honourable Nobanda, in that order. Honourable Fagu.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me start by appreciating both presentation from the Commission and from the Department, Honourable Chairperson. My first question is for the Department. You are saying on the deregulations, it's not something that is advisable to be done now because of the inadequate supply and the lack of infrastructure, inadequate infrastructure. So my question is simple, that is that not, therefore not a long-term building and infrastructure importing? Is that not something that will be happen in the near future? How soon can that be fixed? Thank you. The second question is, the Commission recommended that NERSA be given some more responsibilities of regulation. But apparently, from the response of the department, there are legal limitations on that. So I want to know the response from the department. What do you think about the capacity of the department in being a father and doing everything in that family, so to speak? I appreciate the fact that the department is saying it wants to focus on the end user, on the consumer. That's really appreciated. My last question to the Commission on the transgressions: have there any be consequential death on the transgressors? Have there been any consequences or punishment or whatever?
Dealt with before the regulation is considered.
you continue to say this will happen in the amendment of the Petroleum Product Act. When do you think this will happen? The other one I wanted to raise it, but unfortunately the chair has raised it, the issues of recommendations. The other one, chair, relates to on the department again. Relates to the issue of MOU and NERSA, between NERSA and NTNPA, to deal with this overlapping of misalignment in the regulatory mandate. Where are we now as the department? The other one, Chair, you relates to, where am I starting? The issue of I'm just there, Chair, don't worry. The department will engage, the Department of Energy will engage the Department of Transport. Department of Transport to determine if the ultimate solution of the Memorandum of Understanding between NERSA and the TNPA to deal with those overlaps, what will happen? Is there any time frame between you and of you engaging the Department of Transport to determine the ultimate solution with regard to the amendment of the legislation? The other one, Chair, now is going to the Commission. Just be patient with me, Chair. The Commissioner made mention of the issue of site visit on the companies that are not abide by the law. But you made mention of similarly, the department is not hands on because the issue of what do you call it? You made mention of regulators that are not the department does not have much more of regulators to monitor the activities of these companies that are not abiding by the law. So I just wanted to check you if you, because you are accusing the department here, that the department is not hands-on to deal with the issue of monitoring the activities of companies that are not abide by the laws. So when do you think this can take place, can happen? The other issue relates to the four wholesalers that have a foreign origin with some levels of BEE participation. And you made mention of three of these are from French origin, the other one is German origin. This form, and I just want to check with you as to whether are these, in terms of the BEE, are you considering the South Africans, the historically disadvantaged South Africans, including the Chinese? Because in terms of our policies here, the Chinese regard themselves as the South Africans or the historically disadvantaged South Africans. Did you ever consider some of these Chinese, irrespective of the South African, historically disadvantaged South Africans, young women, youth, people with disabilities with regard to the level of the BEE? Again, Chair, with regard to these companies, because some of these foreign nationals are born in South Africa, I'm not coming to Chinese now. Africans who are born in South Africa also regard themselves of, say, as South Africans, because a number of them, 50% of them, they have the South African IDs. Do you consider them as part and parcel of the South African historically disadvantaged people? The other one, Chair, be patient, Chair.
No, continue. I'm very patient.
Just be patient.
No.
You see, Chair, you made mention of nurses here. I'm not sure as to whether nurses will be able to respond, because I'm not quite sure as to whether we have invited nurses to present. It's not. But it's here. I don't think they can respond on this issue. But the competition commission, I think, will be able to respond. In case you don't have an answer, please, Commissioner, don't manufacture convincing answers here. Say we don't have answers. That will be the responsibility of NERSA to explain in the near future. Because here you were accusing NERSA in all your what do you call it, your slides. NERSA is being, you know, dealt with seriously as if they are not in charge of what is it. They don't even know what is it that they must do. Can you explain your relationship with NERSA? Is your relationship with NERSA a good working one, or I'm not quite sure you'll be able to explain to some of us so that we can be able to understand what is this animal, NERSA. The issue, Chair, relating to you, Commissioner, you what have you done, realizing that the Department of Energy is because it's being accused here, there are lots of things that I was going through. It's not hands-on on dealing with the issues relating to LPGs. Have you ever met with the department to say, hey, Madon, Pella, here you are messing up. These are some of the things that we want you to do to deal with them. Because we don't want to have the report every from time to time when we are called here to say the Department of Energy, NERSA, and their entities, they are not hands-on. Have you ever met with the department to say, my daughter, you are messing up here. These are some of the things that must assist you. I might come back because I can see Mr. Mabunda saying to me that don't go further, Mr. Matlala, because you might end up taking my questions. Can I be clarified, Commissioner, with regard to your 10% versus your 90% versus 10%? I couldn't understand it very well when you were explaining it here. Thank you, Chair.
Mabunda?
Thanks, Chair. Ndi matsheloni a vhuḓi vho mudzula tshidulo. Chair, I think Honorable Matlala consumed almost some of my questions. I know that he has that capacity of plagiarism. But Chair, I just want to check with the Commission to see how often do they make their recommendations with regards to different departments. But one other thing in their presentation, they made mention of the transgression and generally, Chairperson, I think it's a trend in all departments, government departments, that officials will be officials in the department at the same time, consultants outside. And when they decide to take package, they just come around the corner and become something which they know very well that they have done something about the system, which obviously they will become consultant when the system is not working well. I think that is a trend, and that is what we see all the time. But commissioner or commission, looking at this thing of monopoly in this LPG, how many people were disadvantaged in terms of job creation? Because I want to believe that in the process of being locked outside the system, there were people who were ready to create some jobs. But in terms of your own analysis, how many were supposed to have created jobs for the jobless? And how many people lost the jobs in the process? The department talked about the delay, especially in the implementation, especially in the infrastructure development. I don't know what could be the problem, but I just suspect that there could be a poor planning, because it could be a delay in terms of time frame. Which the project was supposed to have completed vis-a-vis the cost or maybe the budget. Because without the resources, really, there is going to be a delay. The last question, Chair, is just related to what Honorable Matlala raised, to say the non-compliance. Maybe we need to know from the Commission point of view to say, this is what you recommend with regard to non-compliance. Because, Chairperson, it can be that there are those who will not comply with the law and run away with the murder without really being questioned and be punished for that matter. Maybe the other issue with regard to job creation, again, looking at the empowering the previously disadvantaged, looking at the SONA. What did the SONA say, and how much have we managed to implement what the SONA talks in terms of job creation in this particular department or this section? Thanks, Chair.
Oh, go ahead,
Thank you, Chair. Marono noted. You noted me even though I did not raise my hand.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Mine is on, on the 9 inspectors that DOE has. What is the department doing to increase this or to make sure that of all the 5,000 service stations, they are covered? The other one is on the methodology reviewer. Don't you think, Jorge, from 2012, we did not... Okay, this has, was last reviewed in 2012, this methodology, pricing, what. Don't you think, Jorge, we should be doing this reviews regularly, even if it's not yearly, but on a regular basis, so as to at least find out in time what is going wrong, what can be done to correct certain things. And the other one is on these contracts that you find, Jorge, they're about 25 years. Is this from, are these contracts from 1994, or it's something that is that were given just now, or and do you think or did you find that from all these contracts, it's something that has been happening? Because I remember even in Eskom we have a problem like this where you find people have been given contracts for over 30 years. And how do we change that so that we don't find ourselves with one person giving a contract for 30 years, but they are not delivering, and there is nothing that we can do to stop them or to take away the contract and put in some other person? If we do, they take us to court. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. Start with the Competition Commission and then followed by DOE. The let's go through the questions. I think it's important to go through the questions. But it does appear we can deal with the regulatory issues of both pricing and non-pricing. That's, but we're going to have to pay attention to the fundamental issues of the two related issues of demand and supply. Access, so that there's sufficient access to LPG so that to, in order to stimulate demand, so which raises questions about capacity of import storage. So I think that is at the heart of the. So Mr. Bogden says when we have done that, then Adam Smith will sort the rest. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the fundamental thing for me. That what are we doing to ensure that we can have sufficient, we have capacity to ensure that there's access to LPG, and so that we can generate demand. But we have a whole lot of specific questions that we've got to address. So can we, let's go through those.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to attempt to cover what is relevant to the Commission, and I do apologize if I miss any, because I think the questions are also somewhat overlapping. Maybe my colleague can help But let me start with the issue of the status of the recommendations, because I think it's very important, sort of a legal foundation of what we do. This tool of market inquiries, the way I see it, is a very powerful tool in the hands of policymakers. The Commission is not a policymaker, neither does it make the law, so it cannot usurp that power, and the Competition Act doesn't allow it to do so. What it does, it allows it to go to the marketplace, inquire, and even compel people to submit information. The information that the department ordinarily wouldn't have, we would be able to compel people to provide it to us. And this powerful instrument then, I think, enables us to make informed and hopefully well-studied recommendations to government. And this is why that we must hand the report to the minister, who must table it in parliament, but also discuss it with his colleagues. So it becomes a report that may or may not be acted upon at the executive's pleasure. I suppose it's also reported to parliament for transparency, so that the executive is held accountable for what's been presented to it. But that's how far we can take it. That is the law. I know that there has been a lot of engagement between ourselves and the department on this, as well as NERSA. And I think there is an appreciation of problems. I mean, we may not always agree precisely on how the problems could be resolved. The one issue where we are 100% with the department on is exactly the issue, Chair, you are raising about supply constraints. Supplies for LPG in South Africa will come from refineries or imports. We don't have much control over refineries. We depend on whether they are sufficiently incentivized. And there may well be technical limitations on them meeting that demand. The alternative is imports. Imports is where we have the most significant constraints. I mean, some of the projects that we are seeing coming on stream now have taken about 10 years in the pipeline. We have spoken to industry players about these matters. Part of what we do is merger regulation. We've seen a takeover of emerging black firms who have been active in this area. And when we tell them that we are going to block the transactions because they lead into consolidation and removal of effective black competitors, small competitors, they beg us that, in fact, there is no scope for growth because we can't import. We can't import, and we cannot get more supplies from refineries. So many of them have been absorbed into this big four, largely because they cannot get access to supply. And predominantly that has been an infrastructure problem. Some of them have had financial backers, including including DFIs supporting them. But they cannot build facilities fast enough to be able to compete in the market. And they've opted to be collapsed into the larger players. So I think this is a big issue. This this issue of infrastructure and imports, because in it hinges this question of when do you do deregulation. I don't think we will have an answer on what is the ideal time, because as long as you have bottlenecks, you actually can't deregulate. And you will then have to come back to it. And I think, again, this is something that we leave to the department as to whether the time between now and eventual deregulation, which we don't know when will come, whether we can live with the current state, we can live with the status quo. The imbalance has been pointed out by the acting DG. Broadly, again, let me paint it. You have a regulated price from refineries upstream. You have a regulated price at a retail level. Why then do we have high prices? It seems to me that part of the problem is, reality we have to confront is that regulation has not worked. Of course, there's all these infrastructure issues, but regulation as we currently have has not worked. Because if it had worked, we would have aligned from production at refining level pricing throughout the value chain up to retail. We, as the Commission, have said part of the big problem is wholesalers. And the wholesale segment is unregulated. And that's where, and these are some of the most profitable companies in the value chain. Most profitable area in this market is not retail. Most profitable area is wholesale. And it's not regulated. Right, so that's where the rents go to. There is an issue about the MOU, which talks to this issue of infrastructure. We're not talking about the typical MOU between government departments, which is just a commitment to work with each other at a broad level. Here we're talking about alignment of regulatory processes, the legal processes, and decision making. Because an investor has to know. It's about certainty, it's about clarity to investors that if I'm making an application to NERSA and TNPA, this is the process that I can expect, and these are the timelines in terms of decision making. When we were talking with the industry, the issue of time came out very strongly. That yes, you can make your application, yes, eventually you will get the decision, but will the investment case still be there by the time decisions are made? So this is the issue that must be regulated very tightly, and we came up with this proposal of an MOU, not because we are thinking of this existing MOU. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an MOU with responsibilities and obligations on regulators, on legal processes and timing of those. On the on this issue of refineries, I'm not a technical person, and I'm not going to take too long on it. Incentives go a long way, so I think that again the department is best placed to look at this. Because if you are operating a regulator and you must produce LPG and you must produce fuel, diesel and petrol, what will determine your sort of how much you produce of each of these are the incentives, which include the pricing
So the regulated price of other fuels have a very direct impact. So if you want to really grow gas industry in general, including LPG, you have to look at it in view of all your other products that come out of a refinery. That's a big question we did not even look at. But I would suggest if you, because it's not impossible to reconfigure refineries, but for people to make those choices, it's going to depend on what returns they could be expecting and what is the counterfactual, the alternative that they could be getting if they were to produce something else. I think that the big thing that has come out is this issue of the capacity of the department and whether it is NESA or the department that does regulation. And this is one of the big policy calls that have to be made by the department. What we're saying is that as the department is currently organized and staffed, it is impossible to do this task. Because remember, you have all of these service stations and you have placed a cap on pricing. If people don't comply with that cap, and this we get from people who operate this station, if other people don't comply with the cap, then you are disadvantaging those who comply. So in winter, where there is demand for gas, the demand spikes for gas, and some service stations increase the price and you are not there to sanction them, then you are disadvantaged. You are disadvantaging those who comply, and that undermines the entire regulatory framework. So that's partly why we're saying it has not worked and it can't work under the current circumstances. The issue of regulating the price and adjusting it is also one that will, of course, impact on these incentives and investment decisions, will impact on consumers, what eventually consumers pay for the product and the entire sustainability of the industry. Those decisions, with respect, we think must be taken timely. Markets are very dynamic. Even an adjustment once a year, we think is not adequate. Just like there's fluctuation in fuel prices, so there should be some fluctuation in gas prices. Because otherwise, the issue you are raising, Chair, of supply and demand, which is the basis of regulation, you always working on a sort of outdated numbers. So if we are to do it properly, let's accept that maybe it will be the department that not NESA doing it. But if you are going to do it properly, you have to do it much more regularly than once in 3 years, once in 2 years, or even once in a year. Because it's also not correct to say that the adjustment should always be upwards. It's also not correct that, because we know that, again, the forces of supply and demand do push prices down. In fact, we again can take an example, which is what the department does in fuel. There are good news sometimes, and sometimes there are bad news. We've accepted that. So,
too often of bad news, I just hear them.
So I think those are sort of very big questions I thought I should
I should tackle. I think the transgressions of the Competition Act, which is a very pointed question. We are currently investigating the fixing of the price for cylinder exchange. I'm going to talk a little bit about cylinder exchange because it's another important topic. We are in a legal lacuna. We are in a legal lacuna, and it's very uncomfortable, actually, as a public institution to work in an environment where the practice is not in sync with the law. The practice, and everybody in the room knows this practice, the practice is that there is cross-filling. You only need to go to Makro and buy a cylinder. You can fill that cylinder. When you finish the gas, you can go back. You will be able to find somebody to fill it. Legally, that filling is illegal. It's unlawful because there's not supposed to be cross-filling. Now, all of these cylinders that are sold at Makro and everywhere else, what we're saying is that their filling is illegal. This is the kind of legal gap that we're talking about. You need to fix that, because otherwise, and I accept the issues around safety. I mean, we might decide that we don't want to allow cross-filling. Then let that be the law, and then Makro can't sell cylinders. Right? But we have to be very clear about our choices and the implications of those choices. Right now, we have let the market move on its own, unregulated, even though in law we're saying, well, we hold very high safety standards. So that issue, I think, needs to be addressed. One of the issues that we have raised, which is potentially a transgression, is this issue of long-term leases, because we believe that these wholesalers are dominant in the market, and the long-term exclusive agreements exclude other people from participating in the market. It is not ideal that we open a case on this, because it's going to take time, and we're going to be engaged in a very acrimonious litigation with the industry. We have, as part of our recommendations, said that they must reduce this to a maximum of 10 years. And we have, in this little booklet, suggested that this be done by 30th September. If this is not done by 30th of September, we don't have a choice, because we can't expect other people to implement our recommendations and we don't implement them. We are going to have to open a case against wholesalers if the exclusive agreements persist beyond September 30. On the 90 versus 10%, this is about the supply that goes to SMMEs. We have observed that there is a very limited role for SMMEs in the sector, and we are saying that they must be allocated at least 10%, at least minimum 10% of the market. This requires that refineries, instead of giving all their production to large wholesalers, they must supply these SMMEs at least 10% of their production or their sales, which is the number that we think is still low and is going to need to be monitored and adjusted as time goes. on this issue of the department, I think there was a lot of questions about the departments being sent hands-on and so on. Again, I mean, it's about really appreciating this tool. This tool enables us to go there without fear or favor and say, this is what's happening in market. You can then, as a department, consider what to do with it. And I think the engagement with the department, Ashut has said, has been frank and very helpful even to us, because we have started to appreciate some of the problems in the sector. Everybody accepts that the current arrangement, very few inspectors are there. We're saying that in addition to that, you must understand you're going to need expertise to adjust these regulated prices regularly. So there is another sort of situation that's going to need hands-on work all the time. So it's not a matter of accusing. It's a matter of saying this is what's happening now. This is how we've always done things. We think that we can do things differently. And this is the value of a market inquiry process. I think the issue about a BEE, I will leave it because we didn't probe whether Chinese are part were counted on this. I suppose, I mean, if I go back to that point, which is admittedly not fully covered in our report, we were very worried with the fact that we have lost emerging black entrepreneurs, and some of them were even introducing new products for entrepreneurs, for townships, new sized cylinders. And these have been collapsed into the larger players. And because of this, the participation by blacks in the markets has even been further reduced. And their capacity to challenge the incumbents has been blunted. And this is something that, I mean, beyond us approving the measure, there's very little we can do about once it's out of our hands. And this is something we are flagging for the department. I think I might have... Chair, to be honest, we did not do any work on the employment implications. I think there was a big question about jobs. We did not do any analysis of what this would have meant for jobs. I can tell you though that the delays in investments, we met with people who were going to invest. We met with people who have abandoned projects, who would have invested in import infrastructure and would have been importing gas. So I think these are the answers I could that I noted from my questions here. And with your permission, I'll ask my colleague if I've left anything.
Perhaps just to echo the Commissioner on one aspect, which is we had a lot of engagements with the Department and also with NERSA during the process of doing the inquiry and after the process of the inquiry. The issue of unlocking supply is at the heart of this whole LPG issue, and it will turn on whether the regulator has created the right incentives. The incentives here relate to whether one can set up an infrastructure at a port terminal quickly so that people can come in, and so that the imports can come in, or whether what is currently available from domestic supply, the incentives are rightly set for that production to also assist. Our choice of going towards NERSA is really that NERSA has an extensive experience in regulating other markets on pricing issues, which we think would complement, would be complemented by also considering LPG. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I want to ask if is there any possibility, Chairperson, that we now have all this information to call them again, to discuss this again.
Yes.
And my second question, I would like the department to respond to the issue of black players being absorbed, because the transformation issues that hurts me now. How can that be fixed? Okay, thank you.
On being called back, I think at the very beginning, the commissioner did answer the question about the monopoly we have. So the department, when they respond to your questions, can deal with the issue of transmission as well. The commissioner did say that this inquiry did not include that aspect, but it's a big issue. So how is it going to be dealt with going forward? So as part of your suggestions on how you take the recommendations forward, perhaps we should deal with that matter as well. Okay.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to maybe start with the issue of regulation. Say that the department has been regulating fuel prices since 1994. And this is, so I think the issue of capacity. So petroleum prices are regulated on a monthly basis by the department, and we have never gotten it wrong for petrol and diesel. So I don't want to, but I think it's important that I place that on record. Secondly, we change the retail price of LPG every month as well. So that, for us, there's no issue around that. I think what is changed once a year are margins that accrue at different levels along the value chain. For petrol, we change them once a year. For LPG, we do the same. So I think it's important that I clarify that matter, because I think there is capacity to do that. And I think that is one area that we believe we do quite well, Chair. I want to also just deal with the issue of incentives, to say when you incentivize LPG, you are then telling the oil companies, import more petrol. Because when you make LPG, you sacrifice petrol. That's the technical implication of that. So we are at a situation in South Africa where everything, we import diesel, we import LPG, we import petrol, we import jet fuel. So which of these are you going to sacrifice? So I think that is important that that is also recognized. Chair, not to make any excuses, one of the biggest challenges that we had between 2012 and 2015 was unreliable refinery operation, particularly during winter. And those unreliable refinery operations actually impacted the market negatively. Suppliers could not get, you know, or wholesalers could not get supply, because at some point the BP Shell refinery was down for a long period. The Chevron refinery in winters has been unreliable for a number of years, and that situation has probably just changed in the last year or two. Now, this year, we didn't have any LPG shortage reported to us. Why? Because we have this infrastructure that has been built in Saldanha, and then the imports that are coming via Mozambique. So clearly, the issue of availability of supply had an impact on this market. I just thought I should say that up front. Chair, also just to say, we take the report of the Competition Commission very seriously, to such an extent that we have what is called a response plan to it. It's an internal response plan with timelines saying who does what when. Where we think we have to engage the commission, we are going to go back and engage. Because when we say we think perhaps this is not the best time to implement this decision, we will discuss that with the commission and come, you know, to some recorded understanding that this is the way that the department has dealt with this. Now, on the question, the first question, the issue of deregulation, I think this can come fairly quickly, depending on how quickly the infrastructure for import comes in. We are told that the Kuga infrastructure will be ready in 2019. The Richards Bay one is expected in 2021. Now, the call that we would have to make is, do we adjust or do we amend, you know, the acts for the Gas Act, the Petroleum Products Act, the Petroleum Pipelines Act, we'll amend them. And then in 2021, we come back and say those amendments are no longer, you know, effective. So that's the call that we will have to make. But again, it will be informed, Chair, by what we see happening in the market. The issue of the capacity of the department, I think we have raised issues of capacity in as far as the numbers are concerned. I think we could use more inspectors. One inspector per province, particularly for Gauteng, is grossly inadequate. But there is a freeze on additional costs of compensation of employees in whole of government because of the fiscal constraints. So we have to work with what we have. What are we thinking about covering? It's not even 5,000, it's about 9,000 outlets, because the 5,000 is service station. Our view is that we need to work with municipalities to be able to do this. They need to assist us in, you know, making sure that they can monitor particularly the issues around whether somebody has got a license to do filling or not. The amendments, the Petroleum Products Amendment, I do not want to sound overly optimistic. However, we believe that we will be ready to go with an amendment before the end of the financial year. Why is that? We have recently received a certificate from the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation saying that our reasoning for amending the Act makes sense, because we have to do a socio-economic impact assessment. So that now has been passed, so we can proceed with the amendment of the Act. The MOU between NERSA and TNPA does exist. It is effective in our view. There are regular meetings between the two. I think what is lacking, perhaps, is that we need as a department to begin to participate in those meetings to make sure that we push everyone towards a particular alignment. Where the Department of Transport is required is that they are responsible for the Ports Act. So the ports, what the TNPA does is in terms of the Ports Act. So we will need to consult with them about this misalignment and make sure that actually we begin to map out a process which will achieve better alignment within government. But for that, we can't do it just for LPG. We have to do it for everything else. And that work has not started. But I think the where we need to start is by attending these meetings between TNPA and NERSA, which are regular meetings, just to get an understanding of where they are, what they think about the issues. Now, I think the issue of the Javelin syndrome that Honorable Mabunda has raised, I think that we always believe that we have mechanisms in place to detect these on time, and where we find them, we do act, but perhaps we may miss, you know, from time to time, we may miss one or two. But we are very strict about the issue of not having people straddle between participating in business and also being in the government regulatory space. The delays in infrastructure, maybe again we need to maybe do a note for the committee on that, because that was due to a court case that dragged for years, not necessarily because of NERSA or TNPA. The bidders took each other to court, and in the process, I think the LPG industry, in my view, suffered because they then went to the, you know, for appeals, and then the appeals were overturned and all of that. So we can do some kind of write-up on that, Chair. The issue of, I think I've covered the inspectors. The timeline, we've developed an implementation plan / response plan, and we are going to start acting on these issues. The issue of transformation, we are busy now with an issue, with a program of aligning the liquid fuels charter to the codes. the PEE code. That process is unfolding as we speak, and is being led by Ms. Ligeti, the DDG for Petroleum Regulation. So, Chair, at an appropriate time, I think we would welcome an opportunity to give an update on that. Because, again, there we are setting very strict requirements for the players to ensure that there is transformation in the sector. And through the discussions that are ongoing, the targets are beginning to stretch, and the players are, you know, I think the industry players are finding each other in that process. But it is a regulated process. We cannot proceed without, you know, consensus being reached. Chair, I think I've covered most of the questions. I'm not sure if I've left any. Thank you.
In fact, we don't have time to cover.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. And I think thank you as well to the Commission, because they've given a context in terms of the work that they have done. And I want to also echo the fact that for us, the work that they do is very important, because it enables us to have a mirror, because there are some of these issues that we pick up, we would raise, but then we are then seen as the player and the referee, being the player and the referee on some of these things. So having that eye is actually very useful for us. We have discussed among ourselves the issue of the fact that the price of LPG, as the acting DDG said, is extremely high. But when you look at who the main beneficiaries are, they are neither the retailers nor the refineries. It's the wholesalers. So it's the go-betweens. It's the usual issue of when you have go-betweens that you have this thing. So it is an important issue. And this issue of wholesalers and their transformation is not only in the LPG. It's across the energy sector in general. So it is something that we are definitely seized with, and would want to be making changes around that. The question of transformation is also very key, obviously, because we need to break down some of these things. And I think we're making a little more progress in other sectors than maybe we have done in this one. So it is a delicate issue, because in order to deregulate, you need to make sure you deal with the infrastructure constraints. And as you do that, what you're basically doing is you're opening up the space for more imports, and the imports have a direct impact on us, because it depends on the fluctuations of the currency. Ideally, you'd want to be getting more refineries, but as long as the price of oil is at that level, it's not an incentive for people to invest in refining capacity. So there are all those conditions that we need to be looking at. But I think we definitely would need to come back and talk about what has been raised in terms of the up to 8 years for licensing. It's not the licensing that was actually the problem. The licensing happened long ago. The issue was a fight between competitors. And I think it's unfortunate that it came out as licensing, because if you look at institutions like NERSA, they actually have very strict timelines in terms of the turnaround time for licensing. They have to, within the 90 days, 30 days, they must have a response, they must have a public inquiry, and so on and so forth. So they have a maximum of 3 months. But while they are doing that, there's also the TNPA and TNPA issues that have to be handled. So we need to understand that there are all these unfortunate complexities, but there's also limitations in terms of regulation of how far a NERSA can go. NERSA regulates piped gas. and that's as far as the regulation goes. It does not regulate any other form of gas. So there are quite a number of different iterations that would really need to understand around this. I think the issue of NERSA and TNPA having an MOU and meeting, I think it's actually been working quite well because there is actually no competition between the two. They both see themselves as enablers. So that has actually been working quite well. I think it's just that some companies would want to get certain conditions that regulations do not permit us, sharing of pipelines and all that. Some do not want to do that. So I think that one has been dealt with. Transformation, absolutely key. And on top of transformation, I think the issue of penalties that actually act as a deterrent is one aspect that needs some serious strengthening in a lot of these issues. So I think, Chairperson, once again, I want to say a big thank you to the Competition Commission, because it allows us to be able to say when we deal with some of these things that this is not about us not liking you as a company, but there is these issues. So it's a backup for us, and it's an assistance in terms of the work that we're supposed to do and the policy decisions. And we really would want to be moving towards deregulation, but we need to make sure that when that deregulation happens, it does facilitate rather than consolidate the monopolies, because if the time is not right, that's what the net effect will be. We'll actually be putting more of the market into fewer hands. I think those were the issues, and yeah. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I'm listening to honorable members making remarks. I can only take 10 minutes of their time because we started 10 minutes late. It's exactly 10 past, so we have got to stop. So thanks very much to the commission and to the department. So I think honorable members, just something to note coming out of this from what the commissioner said. On the implementation of the recommendations, it is now up to the executive and the legislature to ensure that the executive is following up on those matters. We will convene a follow-up meeting just to see how far we are, at some point just to see how far we are with regard to the implementation of these recommendations. So for today, that's all. Thanks very much to everybody who was present here. The meeting is adjourned.